All right, our first lesson, friends, is in 2 Kings. And we're at the very beginning of 2 Kings, chapter 2. I tell you, if you've never read these books, they're very interesting. They're entertaining books. They're worth the read. And we're coming to the end of the time of Elijah, a huge prophet in the Jewish history. In fact, this is the very end of Elijah's life and the transfer of his role to Elisha, his mentor, or mentee, actually, his apprentice. Join with me here, 2 Kings chapter 2, the first 12 verses. Let us read. Now when the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me as far as Bethel." But Elisha said, "As the Lord lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of the prophets who were in Bethel came out to Elisha and said to him, "Do you know that today the Lord will take your master away from you?" He said, "Yes, I know. Keep silent." Elijah said to him, "Elisha, stay here, for the Lord has sent me to Jericho." But he said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they came to Jericho. The company of the prophets who were at Jericho drew near to Elisha and said to him, "Do you know that today the Lord will take your master away from you?" And he answered, "Yes, I know. Be silent." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." But he said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So the two of them went on. 50 men of the company of prophets also went and stood some distance from them as they both were standing by the Jordan. Then Elijah took his mantle and rolled it up and struck the water, and the water was parted to the one side and to the other until the two of them crossed on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I may do for you, please, before I'm taken before you." Elisha said, "Please, let me inherit a double share of your spirit." He responded, "You have asked a hard thing. Yet, if you see me as I'm being taken from you, it will be granted you. If not, it will not." And they continued walking and talking, and a chariot of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah ascended in a whirlwind into heaven. Elisha kept watching and crying out, "Father, Father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen." But when he could no longer see him, he grasped his own clothes and tore them in two pieces. The word of the Lord, my friends. turn back to the ancient words, and we're in Mark's gospel again, friends, although we're skipping ahead a few chapters to get to his version of the transfiguration. Chapter 9, beginning at verse 2. Six days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but just Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. Of course, they didn't understand that one either. Okay, friends. I'm going to begin by telling you something that might sound a little odd, but it's important for you to know that you did not get here by yourself today. Now, if you did actually come with someone else, that might not seem so odd. But for those of you who came to church alone or by yourselves today, you might be wondering if the pastor is paranoid or just being weird. No one, as far as I know, is following you. I don't think anybody's waiting out in the car or lurking behind the bushes. None of us got here by ourselves. I needed help to get here today. While I did manage to dress myself, there were lots of other things that needed to happen in my family to make life work day in and day out, right? Today and every day. We're in the middle of moving, as many of you know, so that need is only exponential. None of the last four moves that we have done would have happened without getting others to come and help, for that matter. Some pieces of furniture are just too big to move by yourself, as much as I might like to try. Actually, honestly, I do have the umbilical hernia repair to prove it. Is that too much information? Anyway, by next weekend, we should be done, thankfully. But even that's not really where I'm going today. We did not get here by ourselves, and that help extended far beyond those friends and family who might help us to get up and get going. I'm thinking more of the spirits. Now, this is getting more interesting. How would you be different? How would your life be different if your great-great-great-great-great-grandmother had married Theophanes or Argyle instead of William? This is really a striking point. One seemingly small change in a distant family link would have had a tremendous impact on who we are, where we live, what we do, the life we know. It could be that not all that much would have changed geographically, but socially, some people in history, didn't have much to say. So, I don't know. What I'm saying is even genetic differences may have altered your very existence. If you existed at all, that one link in your altered family tree, what if that one link couldn't have had children? Well, that might have made your story very different. Today, our hope goes even deeper. This is good stuff. This is where we get to true community. Who made you the person you are today? Family probably played a big role, and whatever your family looked like played a huge role in making you the person you are, with successes and maybe even failures. But I'm even more interested in those things along the way, those people who inspired you, those people who challenged you, those people who encouraged you, who taught you, who guided you, who gave you what you needed to be and to do what you are today. Just after I got married, I moved to Crewe, a block down from where we live today. That's a different sermon about how far we get in life. But I joined the Pride Memorial Presbyterian Church there in town where my wife was raised. There was an amazing older lady in that church, Mrs. Sally Wingo, who was just a fireball of a spiritual presence. She was wonderful, a spiritual kind of force that was just somebody I'd never known before. She had energy and learning and presence and teaching, and she saw me, I think she saw in me some of the questioning and struggles and what do I do with my life kinds of things that I think I had at that point. And she saw for me a different path, right? She saw for me a clearer path. She saw for me a direction where I might go. And, I didn't really know her necessarily all that well. It wasn't like I'd known her for years and years. But she made an impact on my life that inspired me to follow that path that I did. She gave me resources and guidance for the journey. And this was a crucial time of my life when I was just walking around waiting for that lightning bolt to hit me. I was spending time with God in deeper and richer better ways that I'd ever known. Another lady in the church there was moved enough by her desire to go into the ministry that she offered to help us pay for our health care while we were in seminary. You know, generosity is just an enormous way of moving feet in different directions. I went to Louisville Presbyterian Theological Seminary for my Master's of Divinity degree because I could go for free. They had a fund for people who had Greek or Latin in college to go to seminary for free. And at Hamden, Sydney, under the tutelage of Dr. Wayne Tucker, I had both Latin and Greek. And that's only because in high school I had Latin because of Shirley Rash. When she was here at Longwood, got her Latin at Hamden, Sydney, and she encouraged me to go where? Hamden, Sydney. Yes. I could not have gotten here by myself. I couldn't have gotten here by myself. I know. This is exactly useful for the passages that we encounter today. It's hard not to be enthralled with the story of Elijah and Elisha, two of the greatest prophets. Elijah has always had a special place in God's story as the man who never died in the usual sense. Amazing story after amazing story was the life of Elijah as he represented God's righteous anger toward the wickedness of the day, as he stood up to the prophets, as a prophet himself stood up against the army of prophets who were employed by Ahab and Jezebel in service to the pagan god Baal. And any day that ends with fire coming down from heaven, that's a big day. The stories about him were legends. And the people were, of course, even intimidated by him. They were nervous to be around him. But one person who followed him faithfully to the end, of course, was his apprentice Elisha. Talk about someone else who was shaped by someone else. Elisha was minding his own business, plowing in the field. And Elijah walks up and calls him, and he just drops it and goes. Just like Jesus and the fishermen, right? A complete and sudden life change. Elisha followed and learned and grew as a prophet person until today's story. As Elijah is being swept up to heaven, he asks Elisha what he should receive for his dedicated service to carry on. He wants a double portion of the spirit that Elijah had. Even Elijah is taken back, and he seems to doubt that Elisha really understands what you're asking for. But Elisha is resolute. Elijah does not even know whether it'll happen, but he does know how he will know. If you see me headed out to heaven, it'll happen. And he does. And this is a profound example to others, making you the person you become. And of course, there's another even more amazing example to me. We don't really associate Jesus so much as someone who needed help, right? The help of others to become the person he was. While sometimes he seems to brush off his parents and their place in his life, they were absolutely important to him and absolutely taught him how to be and do in the world. His mother continued to play a very important role in his life, even to his last day when he entrusted Mary to the care of John while Jesus was hanging on the cross. But this particular scene of Jesus just before he heads to Jerusalem is today's story. This is what we call the transfiguration of Jesus, because he takes on this superhuman appearance before a few of his disciples, and he has this conversation with Elijah and Moses. As Jesus prepares to enter Jerusalem for the last week of his life, he turns to these giants of Jewish history for help. Elijah and Moses were probably the two biggest figures in history besides David. They were prophets. Elijah was pivotal for his work in the faithlessness of Israel and keeping the candle burning. And Moses was the great deliverer out of slavery and the giver of the law. When Jesus needed companionship, guidance, encouragement, and help, he turned to them. The assistance of these long-gone heroes of faith was one part of his journey to his death and our life. It's easy to sometimes forget how much we have to rely on others throughout our years. You know, because you know what? We're Americans, right? Our rugged individualism, it's hard for us to ask for help. It's hard to admit how much help we have received. I found out this week that the assistance programs for those struggling with addiction here at the church that we support has withered to just one group from three. NA and AA have both offered needed sessions here every week, but now it's just one NA group once a week. I don't think that's because people are no longer struggling as much with alcohol or narcotics. In fact, I bet the struggle's just as much, if not greater. Part of today's message is about how we have received help ourselves from those who've gone before us, but it's also about how we can continue to help others to become more and more their best selves. If we realize how much we have been given in life, it is easier to invest in the lives of others to seek their blessings. We have been given so much, and God has equipped us to do so much more for others if we are willing. This is about friends and neighbors and strangers and even our enemies. In fact, the biggest impact we will ever have is for someone who stands against us. Grace is amazing for a reason. It changes lives because it is about love for the sake of love. This kind of support helps It extends far beyond us. Extends beyond us as we think about how we as a church, a community, and a nation might assist those in need right now. You've probably heard about that fiasco in Washington as we try to give assistance to others in critical need, but others are more interested in playing politics than helping real people in real need in this real time. Does it really matter your political leanings when we have the need to stand with others on the shoulders of God's people who've come before us? Do not take the Super Bowl lightly either. Yes, it's about soup. But we are giving tangible, meaningful support to our community. Real people will receive real help right here in this area. I've been assisting in the food distribution through the schools at the Fireman's Arena for a while now, and it's just amazing how far that line extends out the doors, friends. And as families come through, so many are truly grateful for the help. There's so many vessels of grace in our community. So many ways for us to be involved in one way or another. So many ways that we might make the life of someone else better. Do something this week, friends, to remind someone else how special they are, how much they are loved, and how you are rooting for them. You might even change their life. To God be the glory. Amen. As we turn now to our time.